A play fake. Young goes deep middle. He's got Jerry Rice. Touchdown 49ers!
Welcome to another edition of the 49ers Family Podcast, where three generations of 49ers fans break down the game each week and hear from Grandpa Mike as he shares personal experiences and stories since he became a fan in 1949. My name is Josh, and I'm here with my dad, Jared, and my grandpa, Mike, and we are a 49ers family.
What's Ooh-wee. Up? Go Niners.
All right. Go what a game against the Steelers. Would love to get some instant reactions, just kind of right off the bat. It was an awesome game. I mean, to be honest, couldn't really imagine a better start to the season. On the road, at Heinz Field, got the terrible towels. They're a great, you know, sports town, and just took them to the woodshed 30-7. And I mean, pretty much at the end of that second quarter, it wasn't even close. You could tell that this game was pretty much over. So it was just so fun, so exciting, and just happy to be here breaking it down.
Excellent. Yeah, it was so fun to watch. I loved a lot of big plays. It was a dominating performance against a very stout Steeler team on their home field. I think we just came out and did kind of what 49 football is all about right now. And that's Brock Purdy being steady Eddie, delivering the ball. Christian McCaffrey running for his life and pounding the ball. And then we got our skilled players, Ayuk, Debo, Kittle. They're all doing their thing. And then our defensive line dominated. And our secondary was surprisingly played very, very well. So, I mean, it was just a solid game all around.
It was.
Yeah. I thought last Sunday the 49ers really got everybody's attention around the country. It was the most watched game on Sunday. And the Niners were just impeccable in beating really a very good Pittsburgh team. A lot of people picked them to win their division. And just some of the things, it took Pittsburgh 28 minutes and 44 seconds to get a first down. And the other thing that I really, really liked was the confidence that Kyle Shanahan had in this group when it was fourth and one, it's scoreless. And the Pittsburgh 45 and the Steelers, you know, stacked the middle to get the stop the sneak, and Purdy hit Kittle cutting across the formation for 11 yards. So fourth and one at midfield, and Shanahan went for it. So he has great confidence in these guys. Great game.
As he should. Yeah, super fun game. One thing to mention, you know, that victory was the worst home loss for Pittsburgh under head coach Mike Tomlin. So, I mean, it's super fun to be a Niners fan. If I'm a Steelers, oh, man, what a bad way to open the season at home. That's got to be rough. But yeah, looking at our score predictions from last week, you know, the spread – I guess the odds were Niners by 2.5, ended up being 23, so blew that out of the water. And the over-under was set for 40.5 points, which actually there only was 37 points on the board, so technically was the under. We actually all took the over in our predictions. Mm-hmm. I guessed 28-24, Grandpa guessed 24-20, and Dad was 28-14. So based on those scores, Dad, you were actually the closest to predicting kind of the blowout win. You said the Niners would win by 14 points. So good on you.
Yeah. And my prediction this year is that teams, again, like last year, our number one defense points allowed, we're going to beat last year, I think it was 16 points allowed per game on an average. I think I think we're going to be 14 or under points allowed per game. I mean, this was a great example of that. Just seven points on the board for the other team.
Yeah. Where's the siren? We need a hot ticker. That would be historic.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
And when you think about it, They scored one touchdown right before halftime. And one of the reasons they scored the touchdown is two penalties, both on Lenoir.
Yep.
So if that was not happened, they probably would have just kicked a field goal. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Yeah. So one thing that we're going to do this year that I thought would be fun is have kind of a leaderboard to track how we each do as far as our predictions go, from being against the spread and then the over and under, and then get an extra column for who's the closest to the score. So we were all even against the spread and the over under, but Dad, you get a point for being the closest. So we'll see at the end of the year who's got the best predictability in the family. That would be fun.
All right.
Okay.
I like it.
Yeah. And as far as stat sheet surprises, Grandpa, what game stats surprised you? Which ones stood out? Walk us some of the ones that you kind of want to note.
Well, you know, when you consider Pittsburgh as a top 10 defense last year, and we gained 392 yards, that surprised me. Also, Pittsburgh's ineptness really surprised me, because they won their last seven games last year and they were perfect in the preseason, which is meaningless. But Kenny Pickett in the preseason, he only was in five series, but they scored five touchdowns. He right. was just impeccable, and they did nothing. When there was 2 minutes left in the first half, Pittsburgh had 1 yard. So, you know, our yardage, and also we held Pittsburgh to 41 rushing yards. We led the league last year in defending the run, and it was, I think, 77 yards a game. This is 41. I mean, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Our 392 yards is quite a feat over a top 10 defense.
For sure. Yeah, some of the other stats to note, we had one turnover, forced two. We held the ball for 15 more minutes than Pittsburgh did. And we're very even and balanced in the rushing and passing. 203 yards passing, 188 yards rushing. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey's 65-yard run was a big help to that. But 11 penalties for 85 yards. And that kind of takes us to our next section, our segment on opportunities. So I guess building on that box score, Dad, where do you think are some of our opportunities? I look at 11 penalties, and that's kind of unacceptable.
Yeah, just things to build on. Penalties are an issue. Concerned about that for sure. But my biggest concern and opportunities to build on is just improving our offensive line, in particular on the right side of the offensive line with McKivitz. He's just a weak link. Trent Williams bolsters up that left side real nice. But our offensive line, and especially leaning on that right side, is our weak link. And that caused us... TJ Watt got in and got a piece of Purdy, and Purdy could have got hurt. It was almost a turnover. That was a McKivitz, error, if you will. So we still have a little bit of weakness there. Other than that, clean up our penalties, strengthen that offensive line, just keep working that. I mean, we are just stout across the board. Just as I look across the offensive, the lineup on offense and defense, the names, the positions, I mean, we are looking really, really good. So I just say offensive line. I mean, if our offensive line holds, we are unstoppable.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Grant, you probably know the statistic, but we allowed a lot of pressures on Sunday. That definitely is an opportunity. And and Kyle Shanahan and the coaching staff kind of said the same thing, that, you're playing against TJ Watt, former defensive player of the year, had whatever, how many sacks last year. It's going to be a rough game for Colton McKivitz. This week against not as much of a, iconic defensive end that he's going up against should probably play a little bit better, but definitely, I totally agree. Something to build on, something to watch for. Need to get better productivity out of McKivitz on that right side, because we need to protect the quarterback at all costs.
It's essential. Yeah. Yes.
They're going to put Aaron Donald over there on him.
Yeah,
exactly. He does that. He goes to the weak link. So we're going to need to put a tight end next to McKivitz and you know, take care of Donald. We always put a muffle on Donald. He never does a lot to us.
Yeah.
So,
Aaron Donald tends to move around a little bit. He's a strong side tackle, or, you know, he plays offensive line on the strong side. So, I mean, you can design plays to away from Aaron Donald most of the time. He's not always going to play strong. So if you, you know, you run a strong side, you know, offensive, you know, lineup, if you will, stack the right side with McKivitz, Donald's most likely going to be over there. That's the higher percentage play. But then you run left, you know. So I played linebacker, and I remember playing a team. They ran wherever I was, they ran to the other side of the field the whole time. They scouted our team, and I was like, what just happened? I was in high school. I didn't understand, you know, how they scouted us out, but they literally designed their offense away from me, you know. And that's what I'm sure the Niners will do and Shanahan will do.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, then as we think about game balls, you know, if you were in the locker room after the game, who would you give the game ball to? I think it was a great team win, really all around, even considering the O-line and some of the pressures that they allowed. Still a pretty stout game that gave the quarterback enough time to throw. We were able to, you know, avoid, you know, major turnovers or anything. We still put up almost 400 yards, like Grandpa said. So curious who you guys were to give a game ball to if you were in the locker room. We'll start with you, Grandpa.
Well, I mean, you know, there's probably half a dozen guys that deserve a game ball. I would give it to Christian McCaffrey. I mean, he had 152 yards. He just ripped the heart out of Pittsburgh on that 65-yard run to open the second half. I mean, the terrible towels were put away for another day. McCaffrey is just special. He carried the ball 22 times. 7 of them were for first downs. And 129 of his 152 yards came after contact.
Wow.
He is just tough, you know. What a trade that was. He has made us elite. So I would give my game ball to Christian McCaffrey.
Love it. Yeah, he was, I mean, pretty much unstoppable. He takes our offense that is already loaded with weapons to a whole nother planet. I mean, it was just so fun to watch. I love watching that guy break tackles, get those yards after the contact. It's so fun. Dad, what about you? Yeah. Who would you give a game ball to?
Well, I love Grandpa gave it to CMC, Christian McCaffrey, the machine. He's the running back that carries a briefcase to work. And he just, his work ethic and how he plays is just amazing. And like I always say, he elevates the play of every other skilled position on the 49ers. I mean, he shows them how it's done, how to practice, how to show up, how to have the right mindset, and his work ethic is crazy. But with that said, I would give the game ball to Brock Purdy. I love that he was 19 to 29, 220 yards. He moved the ball around from Ayuk, who was 8 for 8, through Kittle, Debo 5 receptions, Kittle 3, CMC 3. He spread the ball around and 0 interceptions. And they have a very good secondary, Pittsburgh. So he protected the ball, moved the ball, distributed the ball across the board with steady Eddie. He stepped up in the pocket a few times, made some runs. He stepped up. He didn't run laterally and get tangled up in the linemen. I just like his steady Eddie play, distributing the ball, protecting the ball and not turning it over. Brock Purdy gets my game ball.
Right. You keep saying Steady Eddie, and I know what you mean, but at the same time, I'd say he is not Steady Eddie. He had some escapability there that I would not consider to be Steady Eddie. There was some flashiness. He picked up that first down, had a little swaggy move celebration.
Sneaky athletic. Sneaky athletic, yes.
Totally sneaky athletic.
A Steady Eddie is the ice in his veins. That's what I'm talking about. The look in his eyes and the ice in his veins, just like some of those three-point shooters in the NBA. I haven't watched the NBA in forever, but there's some guys that just have, you know, just ice in their veins. You know, give me the ball, and they knock down the three. The game isn't too big for them. QBs, the game is too big for them. The moment's too big. That was kind of like what we saw on Monday night with Zach Wilson. I mean, he's a great athlete and a great quarterback. The game just seems too big for him at times. He cannot process information and he just blows up. I mean, he can't get over that. The game isn't too big for Brock Purdy. I mean, it's big boy stuff, and he can deliver the ball and stay calm and steady in the face of complete adversity.
Yeah. No, there's that saying, you know, like, don't let the, you got to like learn to control the situation rather than the situation control you.
Yep.
And it totally feels that way with Brock Purdy. He is in command of the offense. He knows where it's going. He looked very comfortable and confident back there. And it is fun to watch him work. And the guy, it's unbelievable that he went last in the draft. The more and more I watch him play, it is unbelievable.
It is crazy.
Right. We're so lucky to have him. I mean, he was 19 for 29, but really 89% of his throws were catchable. He's very accurate.
Mm-hmm. Very accurate. All right, my game ball, I don't want to repeat. Those are both really good ones. I think I'm going to have to stay on the offensive side of the ball, although maybe we can give some honorable mentions to the defense. Brandon Ayuk balled out on from the get-go. That Purdy-Ayuk connection was there. They just found each other. 8 targets, 8 catches, like at what was 120 yards, I want to say.
Yeah,
2 touchdowns, and that back shoulder to the pylon was
crazy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But he just trusts him so much. It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. You could just tell that they were just in sync. And that's going to go a long way, because as we already said, plenty of weapons, but if they can be, if Brandon Ayuk can put up true wide receiver one numbers, man, that's going to open up a ton of things for even other people. And I don't even know how you stop Ayuk from doing that. I mean, his route running is unbelievable. He's got speed. He's got the yak mindset. And how about the downfield blocking on that 65-yard run? He made 2 blocks.
Fabulous.
And Ray McLeod comes out of nowhere to deliver the final blow that allows Christian McCaffrey to get into the end zone. I mean, just beautiful stuff.
Two assignments on that, and he blocked 3 guys.
Yeah. One thing as Shanahan, I was reading something that Grandpa sent over. There were several articles, but one of them was Shanahan's drafting of wide receivers and what they're looking for. They're not looking for speed. They're not looking for 4.3s. They're looking for physicality. The league is changing. It's there. The refs are allowing more physicality out there. And it's getting real physical, good blocking, and just bigger, stronger, like Debo style receivers is huge. And Ayuk and McLeod, Debo, they are just that. They're physical and great downfield blockers, as Christian McCaffrey noted, and we got to see. It was a beautiful thing to watch.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. Kittle's physical too. I mean, all physical.
Yeah, very physical.
Yeah. We're a physical team.
I do feel like we do need to mention some defensive honorable mentions. I'll throw a couple out there. I feel free to jump in really quick, but Drake Jackson, 3 sacks. That's going to be there if Hargrave and Armstead and Bosa are pushing on the other side. I mean, they're coming right to Drake Jackson. And yep. So you just got to finish him off. Mm-hmm. So that was awesome to see. How about that? I knew you would love that play when freaking Fred Warner blew up that C gap. Was there with the vengeance and just, yeah. I was watching it happen like, oh, boom.
Yeah. Shooting the gap. It's beautiful. That was just beautiful. Beautiful. Just made me feel so good. And it looked awesome. He was flying around the field. He made a few kind of really nice fill in the gap plays and shooting the gaps. And he was on fire, although he had this a low rating for whatever reason. He didn't have as many tackles. Leading the tackles, what do we have? We had Lenore, who had 10 total tackles, 8 solos. Warner had 8 total, 5 solos. So it's kind of Lenore, our secondary, had the most tackles. That's kind of unusual, but it was pretty to watch. And Lenore, I guess, stood out in a way. He made a lot of tackles, 8 solos. And then we had our whole defensive line with Drake Jackson, 3 sacks, 2 tackles for loss. Hargrave had a sack and 1 tackle for loss. Cleland Farrell, a tackle for a loss. And Kerry Hyder Jr. had a sack and a tackle for loss. I mean, everybody was contributing. Hufanga and Ward each had an interception. It was just a great all-around defensive effort.
It was.
Lenore, the reason he led the team in tackles is they went after him. They completed 7 of 8 passes against him. So, yeah, he tackled the guy.
Oh, good. That's important.
Well, yeah, it's an awesome game. It's super fun. I mean, like I said, you can't really imagine a better week one winning 30-7 on the road against a good opponent. I mean, Steelers are no joke. So that was a lot of fun. Let's transition now over to Rams week, our division rivals. We've played them 148 times. We own that record, that rivalry, 77 wins to 68 losses. So pretty even, but we have about 55% of the wins there. Rams had their own week one success, really owning the Seahawks in Seattle. That was honestly surprising for me. But as it pertains to this game now, we are on the road, so we're down in LA, or Levi South, as a lot of people say, just because the Niners fans take over that stadium. San Francisco is favored to win by 8.5 points. The over and under is set at 44.5. Game time weather should be a beautiful September day in LA, 73 degrees. And then you got that, the cross breeze coming through that funky stadium at SoFi. What I always forget, and they posted it today on Twitter, but the Rams opt to wear their white tops at home. So the Niners will be wearing their home reds, even though they're playing away.
Great.
Should be a fun game. Really? An afternoon kick, 1 p.m. Pacific. So it should be a grand old time. Let's talk about injuries. Something that we didn't mention from the last game, but we would now, is talking about injuries coming out of the last game, coming into this game. No injuries to report from week one, which is amazing. Way different than whatever it was 3-4 years ago when we played at MetLife Stadium, and it seemed like everybody tore an ACL in the first week. But no injuries week one. The only thing to report is really today at practice, Dre Greenlaw did not practice with a groin injury. So we'll have to kind of watch that and see if that was just kind of more precautionary or if he's dealing with something. Once again, we record these podcasts on Wednesday evening, so we only have Wednesday's injury report to go off of. George Kittle and Ray-Ray McCloud were back to being full participants despite their groin and wrist injuries. I mean, they played, so you would expect them to be, okay, but still were on the injured list. On the Rams side, Joe Noteboom, a guard, offensive guard for them, was a limited participant with an ankle injury, and Akilo Witherspoon, a former 49er, he actually took a crazy, kind of a cheap shot, honestly, on Sunday playing against the Seahawks, and hurt his hip a little bit, although he was still a full participant today in practice, so he seems to be bouncing back fine. But he is now with the Rams. As we think about players and personnel, let's talk a little bit about the Rams. Some of their personnel, they've had quite the turnover. And then talk about some players to watch, because little hint, there were some breakout performances on their offensive side last week. So, Grandpa, who tell us a little bit about their personnel, kind of what's their situation, where are they at? I know they haven't had a number one draft pick in a while, first rounder, I mean. Right. Who are some players to watch?
Well, the Rams have really changed. I mean, 2 years ago, they won the Super Bowl. Last year, they were 5-12. And they've this year, they have 20 rookies on their roster. That's 38% of the 53. And they haven't had a number one in 7 years because of trades. So, and they haven't managed the cap real well. They've had to release a lot of guys. So, the Rams have gone through tremendous change. This game, like, you know, previous Ram games will be won or lost in the trenches. They're, you know, whoever wins the battle of the trenches will win. And we're, I mean, our defensive line is much better than their offensive line. So that's why we do so well. Matthew Stafford last week in Seattle, he threw 34 times and only 6 passes hit the ground. He was not touched, no sacks. They didn't have to wash his uniform this week. So for whatever reason, Seattle had no pass rush, and he just ate them up, 334 yards. They've got these young wide receivers, and there's a guy from BYU, I'm trying to think of his name,
Puka Nacua.
Okay. Number 17. He's taken the place of Cooper Kupp, who's on IR for at least 4 weeks. And he caught 10 passes for 119 yards last week. So our pass rush is going to be very important. We need to make Stafford uncomfortable, and when he has time, he's extremely accurate. I remember Aaron Rodgers years ago when Stafford was at Detroit. Somebody asked Aaron Rodgers, "Who's the most accurate passer in the league?" And he said, "Oh, that's easy, Matthew Stafford." So we need to put pressure on him and have him running around, and which we've done the last. We've won eight in a row. Regular season games in a row. And then the other guy that we really have to handle is Aaron Donald. And he's been, you know, the defensive player of the year 3 times. He's just a beast. And he will move around, and you can bet that he's going to, you know, go up against McKivitt. So we need to, you know, reinforce over there with a tight end or Kittle or somebody. So the Rams have gone through tremendous change. I was shocked last week when they beat Seattle in Seattle. I would not have given them a chance. And they beat them pretty good. Seattle only had 12 yards in the second half. Wow. And how that happened, I have no idea.
Yeah. So,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wondered the same thing. I didn't see any of that game, obviously, with Seattle and the Rams. I did talk to another 49er faithful, Oscar Solares, and a friend of mine, and he was saying he did get to see a little bit of the game, and he said that Geno Smith was running for his life. I mean, he had no time. The offensive line for Seattle sounded like they were playing pretty poorly, and he had no time to make any plays, and it was just a defensive kind of show for the Rams.
Yeah.
Probably Aaron Donald most likely was probably wreaking havoc.
There's a funny clip of the game last week with Seattle and the Rams, and it was Geno Smith yelling, "Oh my God!"
Yeah,
when he got, they just demolished him. Well, so I think the real Smith has shown up.
Yeah,
and that's good. Last year he was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. So it's good Seattle lost. I had looked at their schedule before the season started, and I thought, oh my goodness, their first six or seven games are really soft. You know, they play the Rams and then Detroit, and Detroit beat Kansas City. So that's going to be Detroit's favorite by five, I think. So Seattle could be 0-2.
Yep. You can never look past Seattle, especially the 49er Seattle rivalry is real. And I hold my breath every time we play them. So I love to see them lose. And I think, do we play them twice this year again?
Yeah, we always play them twice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Play division twice.
Yeah. So
home and home.
There you go. So yes.
We play Seattle at the end of the season. Actually, we play Seattle, Philly, Seattle. It's 3 weeks in a row. It's going to be really tough.
Yeah.
So let's keep talking about that. Graham, some of the things you mentioned, now getting into keys to the game. I have two, and then I'll pass it over to you, Dad, for one, and Grandpa for one. My two that I had are one offensive and one defensive. One is, building on what you guys both just shared of the Rams and Seahawks and how the Seahawks struggled against that defensive line. You know, I think Shanahan is historically good at game planning against Donald and taking him out of the game. We do a lot more, quick plays, getting the ball out quick, the average depth of kind of the wide receiver and like those pass attempts. It's like us in Kansas City that have the shortest average depth, or I forget the exact statistic, but it's like depth per attempt at like 11.3 yards where the ball is to where the ball is going, or something like that. Don't quote me on any of that, but I do know that we are among the lowest. So it's about getting the ball out quick and then doing something with it, with all the playmakers, etc. We should be able to do that again. That's my first key to the game. My second key to the game is also kind of what we've already talked about, is that they really destroyed the Seahawks with their passing attack last week. But their running attack was really poor. They averaged only 2.3 yards per carry, and really were kind of forced to throw. And I would almost love, I think they're going to come out throwing just because they recognize kind of who they're going up against. But I would love to kind of take away their throwing game and kind of drop more players. And it really just allow a four-man front to rush and get home so that we can drop seven in the coverage. That would be awesome. Because that defensive line, that pressure is going to make all the difference. Steve Wilks, we did see an increased amount of blitzes this last week, and I think we'll continue to see that. But I just hope they're a little bit more timely and a little bit more rare this week. So, while we're always threatening and kind of doing some stunts, but at the same time, would love to see kind of force them to be more balanced. We'll see how that comes. Dad, what do you think? What's one of your keys to the game?
I think the key that I wrote down was just keeping pressure on Stafford, making him uncomfortable. Stafford, notoriously, you rattle him a few times, you put a lot of pressure on him, he looks like an average quarterback. He's like a Tom Brady. I mean, if there's pressure on him and you can get to him quickly, and we have the manpower to do that with our D-line, I think we'll rattle them, and it will, I think, really shake them up. I don't think they can run the ball against us very well at all. If they have any hope at all, it's going to be through the air. but our D line is, going to have their ears pinned back, and it's going to be fun to watch. And then protecting Purdy, our O line just has to protect Purdy, and it will be, a really fun game to watch.
Yeah. Grandpa, what about you? You already said that, the game's going to be won in the trenches. What else?
The trenches, for sure. The other thing the Rams do, Stafford throws a lot of quick outs. That's why he has a very high completion percentage. But they're just bam, bam, Mm-hmm. And so the linebackers are going to have to shut that down, the quick outs. And then they're not going to be able to run against us. Nobody can. So they're going to throw, and we need to really stop Stafford and block Aaron Donald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's the line, like I said, the line is at 8.5, which has the Niners being favored. And if on paper, the Niners should take him to the woodshed because of their strength in the trenches, kind of what you were talking about, Grampus. But let's get into that a little bit. So mentioned the line is Niners by 8.5. Over and under is set at 44.5. Let's get into some score predictions. Maybe I'll go first this time. I think that I'll take the under, but not by much, just because I do respect their defensive line and what they did to Seattle. I still think we can put up more points than Seattle did, though. I'm going to say we win 28-13. I think our red zone defense will stand them up a couple times, force him to kick a field goal. But yeah, I'll definitely take the Niners by more than 8.5, but I'll take the under and say Niners win 28-13. Grandpa?
Well, I look at this, the Rams have a lot of new people and they're fast. I saw some of the Seattle game and their speed surprised me. But I think we're going to win 35-17. I think we're going to really score. Purdy just, he's since we've had Purdy 9 games, 6 have been over 30 points, and he's so I think 35-17.
Love it, Dad.
I like it. I'll take the barely over. San Francisco Niners 31-14. And I think we may even hold them to under 12, the Rams. And I wouldn't surprise me if we do score, in the high 30s, but I'm going to pick 31-14.
We're all feeling pretty confident. I have them by 15. Grandpa has us by 18. And Dad, you have us by 17. That is, we're drinking the Kool-Aid, I think, after that week one.
I like Kool-Aid.
That red Kool-Aid. I love it. This is a fan podcast for a reason.
It's going to be 70 or 80% of the fans right at the game are going to be Niner fans. It's going to be red. Right. And that really helps the team. They love that. There was a tremendous amount of Niner fans in Pittsburgh. I mean, the Niners travel well. So, I think we'll do real well.
Yeah, we should. We should. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's always a good cut. And now that the Rams have gone back to their more traditional colors of kind of the royal blue, yellow, and white, I feel like it always looks like a good matchup, too. I like the uniform combo. That's just me, though. I like uniforms. All right. Well, Grandpa, we always end these podcasts, 49ers family, with a story, history of the game, random facts and figures and memories that Grandpa's had since being a fan since 1949. Grandpa, what do you got for us today?
Well, Well, I thought it would be appropriate tonight to talk about the rivalry between the 49ers and the Rams and some of the history and how it all kind of came about. So the Rams were founded in 1937 in Cleveland. They were known as the Cleveland Rams, and they played there for 9 years. Not a lot of people know that. And their owner was this guy, Dan Reeves. And in 1946, he put in a request to the NFL to move the team to Los Angeles, and it was denied. And he threatened to end his relationship with the NFL, and he was going to get out of the business. Eventually, they settled, and Reeves moved the team to L.A. in 1946, which is the first year the Niners played as well, but they were in a different league, the AAFC. So Reeves moved the Rams to L.A. in 1946, and it made professional football the first coast-to-coast sports league. So then he needed a stadium, so he went and started negotiating with the L.A. Memorial Coliseum, and they had a stipulation. They had a precondition that they demanded for the Rams to get a lease that they would have to integrate the team with at least one African-American player. And now this is 1946. Jackie Robinson was April 15th, 1947, a year later. So Reeves agreed to that, and he signed a guy from UCLA. I'm trying to think of his name. I'll think of it in a second. So and then the owners went crazy when he signed this first African-American player. And so he signed another one. He was really rebellious. And so anyway, that was in 1946. And let's see, Reeves took a real gamble in moving a team to the West Coast because they didn't know if professional football would click or not. College was very popular. And so the first game that the Rams played at the LA Coliseum was a preseason game against the Washington Redskins, and they drew 95,000 fans. So right away they knew, okay, this is going to work. And then the next thing that took place was in 1948, one of their halfbacks, one of their players painted his leather helmet with horns. And this was the first modern helmet with a logo on it. So everybody liked it. So then he painted horns on the rest of the team's helmets, and they were leather. His name was Fred Gerke. And so then the 49ers were established in 1946, and they joined the NFL in 1950. And that's when the Rams and 49ers started playing. And, you know, there's lots of rivalries around the country. There's Boston and New York and Cleveland and Pittsburgh, and certainly San Francisco and L.A. We, you know, there's the Giants and the Dodgers, and the Warriors and the Lakers, and certainly the Rams and the 49ers. So they've been playing two games a year since 1950. That's 73 years. And at first, the first 30 years, the Rams just dominated. I mean, they were way ahead in the series. They were ahead by 20 games at the end of the 70s. They had 39 wins and 19 losses. But since 1980, the tables have turned, and the 49ers became dominant, and we've won 56 of the last 86, and now lead, we trailed the series by 20. We now lead by 9. So that's a little bit about the the rivalry between the Rams and the 49ers.
Love it. I love that.
That's good stuff.
That's good stuff. And I was also, I did not know that the even though, like you said, they weren't in the same league, the Rams and the Niners both, though, set up camp in California this same year, which is also similar to when the Giants and Dodgers moved from New York out to California in 57, I want to say.
1958.
So how cool is that? That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Parallelism there. Well, appreciate that story, Grandpa. Always fun to hear those and the time you put into kind of putting that together. Sure. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for another episode of 49ers Family. Appreciate everybody tuning in. And if you have any questions, comments, hot takes, email us at 49ersfamily@gmail.com, 49ersfamily@gmail.com. We'll take those questions and comments. I apologize we didn't get to those today. We will try to get those next week. But until next time, go Niners!
Go Niners!